The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land, we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob Frantz on AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, welcome indeed. It is 8 minutes after 9 o'clock. Thank you for joining us. It is a Friday, the 19th morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024, and we appreciate you being with us today. Once upon a time, I called this a fist bump Friday, and kind of fell away from it for a little while there, and maybe because nobody was really picking up on it as much as I hoped they would. But if you want to fist bump the guy next to you, or the person in line in front of you, or in the cubicle over or away from you, just to give them a little greeting, that is a good thing. I promise you, people who raise the fist to someone else in a friendly manner always get it returned, and it's just a nice way to bring in the weekend. So appreciate you being with us on the program this morning. Coming up, we've got a lot of great conversations that we are going to have. Linda Harvey is going to join us at 10:10 this morning from Mission America. We're going to talk about something called Aaron's Law that is being forced into schools, and we're going to talk about whether or not it's being done by a group called Second Step, whether it's preventing abuse or sexualizing children. And I'm looking forward to that conversation. That'll be coming up at 10:10 this morning. We'll have a few other things for you in the last hour of the program, but we are going to be very, very open for you in the morning hour, meaning the early morning hour, rather, this hour. Wide open at 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110 for what we can only call Free For All Friday. Yeah, you pick the topic, even though I'm going to run down the top 9 and 9 for you, tell you what's going on in the world that I am thinking about talking about. I'll give you that, but then I will take your calls, whether they're part of that or not. Again, 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. All right, before we get started with the top 9 and 9, what do you say we go ahead and pledge allegiance? Thank you again for the continued incoming flag photographs that people are sending to me on Facebook and on Twitter. Find me on Facebook at Always Right Radio and on Twitter at France Rants, or just look for my name, either way, and send me your flags that you pledge to in the morning in your car or otherwise. Excuse me. Stand up and face that thing right now if you can stand up. If you can't, don't worry about that. If you can only stand on one leg, Seth, you can do it too. What else? Yeah, and if you're not, take a knee. That'd be harder if you're Seth. If you have one leg, it's harder to take the knee like a Marxist dog you are. Fortunately, Seth is not a Marxist dog, so he's standing proudly and joining us as we say,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, friends, 10 minutes after 9, as long as there's a 9 in the time, then I can officially say,
it's 9 o'clock. Do you know where your headlines are? We do. It's time for the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio.
Heavy headlines this morning, as you probably know because of what happened overnight. Israel carried out limited strikes against Iran early Friday morning, meaning overnight, in retaliation for Tehran firing that barrage of missiles and drones at Israel last Saturday. A well-placed military source says the strike was limited intentionally. Sources familiar said the U.S. was not involved, but there was pre-notification to the U.S. that the Israelis were going to do it. Explosions were confirmed in Iran's Isfahan province, which is near the Natanz nuclear facility. There was concern that the nuclear facility could have been damaged. It was not. This kind of puts to bed any suggestion that many people made on Monday that said the Iranian strike on Israel, 99% of the 300 or so missiles and drone attacks that were levied were shot down, that it was intentionally weak and that there was an agreement because Iran had to respond to an Israeli strike on the Iranian consulate in Syria, and that the Israelis were going to go ahead and let this go because it was kind of a tit-for-tat situation. A lot of people said it was planned that way. I think now we know that was horse crap because Israel did strike, even though, again, it was limited. Retired Admiral James Stavridis said this was, there was an intent here. It was limited, but there was an intent. Listen.
I think it was indeed a muted strike, a limited strike. Clearly, Israel, as we talked about earlier in the week, Joe, had a basket of options here. They could have gone big. There were certainly voices in Israel calling for that. They could have simply left it as cyber, non-kinetic kind of operation. They chose, as you and I talked about a few days ago, kind of in the middle. And I think what they sought to do and they accomplished was to show that they can penetrate Iranian air defenses.
That was the goal right there, to show to the Iranians, no more nonsense from you. Look what we can do. We're not going to annihilate right now, but yes, we can get through your air defense forces. Big, big moment for Israel. And a statement, I think, that had to be made.
Number two.
All right. Yesterday, a band of more than a dozen House lawmakers voted against a resolution that condemned Iran for its attack on Israel. Should be about as easy to get a unanimous verdict as anything, right? Iran attacked Israel. The measure passed with overwhelming support, 404 to 14. Who are the 14 that said, no, we don't condemn Iran? Among those 14, 13 Democrats, including the Squad, you expect that. People like Cori Bush, Pramila Jayapal, Rashida Sharia Tlaib, Ilhan Jihad Omar, Ayanna Pressley, people like Jamal Bowman, Hank Johnson, Barbara Lee, some of these are expected. One Republican. Hey, Seth, guess who the one Republican was?
There's somebody to pick from.
Yeah, there are. We just had him on last week. Guy that I kind of like. But
Thomas Massie
joined the squad in voting against the condemnation of the Iranian strike on our ally Israel. I don't understand. We're going to have Representative Massie back on the show.
Number three.
One more in this issue. The U.S. voted a widely, vetoed, I can read. I wrote it for crying out loud. I ought to be able to read it. The U.S. vetoed a U.N. resolution yesterday that would have paved the way for a full United Nations membership for Palestine, a goal that Palestinians have long sought. The vote in the 15-member Security Council was 12 in favor, the U.S. opposed, two abstentions from the U.K. and Switzerland. Our U.S. allies, France, Japan, South Korea, supported the resolution. The resolution would have recommended that the General Assembly of the United Nations, 193 members strong, where there are no vetoes, that they approve Palestine becoming the 194th member of the United Nations. Some 140 countries have already recognized Palestine, so its admission would have been approved, likely by a much higher number of countries. The Palestinians are currently a non-member observer state, a de facto recognition of statehood that was granted by the UN General Assembly in 2012. But an application to become a full UN member needs to be approved by the Security Council and at least two-thirds of the General Assembly. Now, I've got to pull this off of my wall here. Hold on a second. I want to grab this map of the Middle East that I kind of keep on one of my bulletin boards nearby, just for reference when we talk about some of the goings on there. And I'm looking at the Middle East, and I see Turkey, and I see Syria, and I see Iraq, and I see Iran, and I see Pakistan, Afghanistan, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Oman, Yemen. I see all of these Middle Eastern countries. Nowhere on a map do I see the word Palestine. How the hell can they vote to make Palestine a member of the United Nations when it is not a nation? It's not a recognized state. It doesn't have borders. It doesn't have a government. It doesn't exist. There is no Palestine, which is why there are no Palestinians, which is why using that moniker, and I use it sometimes just for the sake of simplicity, but it's just so wrong and it's just so stupid. The UN hates Israel so much that they would rather recognize Palestine as an actual state, giving it voting authority, for crying out loud, to what? To destroy Israel completely? They would rather give Palestine recognition than actually acknowledge Israel's right to exist as they attempt, as the radical Palestinians, if you want to call them that, in Gaza and in the West Bank continue, and some up in Lebanon, you know, talking about Hezbollah, continue to try to wipe Israel out. Simply astounding. All right, let's move on.
Number four.
The Biden administration believes your gas prices are not yet high enough. That's the old, they didn't say it that way, but it's the only reason that they could possibly have to do this. They have blocked oil and gas drilling across millions of acres in an Alaskan reserve, which Congress specifically set aside for resource development. In other words, these were acres, millions of acres, specifically designated for oil and gas drilling and exploration. The Department of the Interior is expected to finalize regulations this morning. Just days ahead of Earth Day, these regulations would effectively lock up more than 13 million acres of public land within the National Petroleum Reserve. Let me say it again. It was designated a National Petroleum Reserve. And they're shutting it down. This would represent one of the Biden administration's most aggressive actions yet under its climate and conservation agenda. Biden is doing everything he can think of. Everything he can think of to attack American energy, said John Barrasso, senator from Wyoming, ranking member of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee. They're going to prohibit oil production in, of all places, the National Petroleum Reserve in Alaska. That's like saying no more picnics are allowed in Yellowstone National Park. Yes, Biden meant it when he said,
"You don't have to agree, but I want you to look in my eyes. I guarantee you, we're going to end fossil fuel, and I am not going to cooperate with you." Okay?
He does not care what it does to the American economy, American business, or the American family.
Number five.
More from the Biden administration. New rules unveiled to safeguard, as they see it, LGBTQ students. The new provisions fulfill a campaign pledge by Biden to revamp those issued during the Trump administration. Under the new rules, sex discrimination includes discrimination based on how you feel about yourself, gender identity, as well as sexual orientation. The regulation is meant to clarify schools' obligations under Title IX. The 1972 Women's Rights Law, let's say that part again, 1972 Women's Rights Law. That's what this is about. Women's rights. They are stripping them away from women by declaring that men can call themselves women. That outlaws discrimination based on sex in education. Former Education Secretary Betsy DeVos warned of the impact of the rule change before it was confirmed.
if the rule that was put out as a draft is finalized and even close to the form it was put out as, it would effectively render Title IX and the protection for girls and women to access sports meaningless. Because it would say that any biological male who decided that he was a female at that point could join women's teams. And we've seen this happening on countless campuses across the country. I give a ton of credit to Riley Gaines and her fellow athletes and coaches who are really standing up and talking about the practical implications of this.
The Democrats hate Title IX because the Democrats hate women. However, they do like to lock up men who are accused of harming women. Because the second part of this new rule is the sexual assault rules that were put in place by President Trump are now gone. The rules that actually give males who are accused of sexual harassment an opportunity, be quiet you, an opportunity to defend themselves. Remember Believe All Women, which started during the Obama administration? Yeah, Believe All Women. Yeah, they're going back to that. Anybody who accuses a man, the man or the male in the school, can be suspended and punished before an investigation takes place. This is something that Donald Trump corrected that President Biden now is completely eliminating. Again, reprehensible.
Number six.
A new national survey from Emerson College polling shows former President Trump ahead of Biden in a head-to-head matchup, and when a third-party candidate is factored into the race as well. The poll found 46% of voters favoring Trump, 43% over Biden, for Biden rather, 12% undecided. When the undecideds are asked which candidate they're leaning toward, Trump jumps up to 51%, Biden increases to 48%, so the margin stays the same. When independent presidential candidates are included on a ballot test, people like Robert F. Kennedy Jr., 44% support Trump, 40% for Biden, and 8% for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. In an unrelated story, Joe Biden says polling among little kids shows that little kids hate him.
I see a sign when I'm going through a neighborhood or a rural town and in the West, or Senate, to see big signs that have a Trump sign in the middle that says F. Biden, and having a little kid standing with his middle finger, 7 years old, 8 years old. Well, I promise it happens all the time.
Yeah, well, there's a reason. But all that little kid is saying to you is, let's go, Brandon.
Number seven.
12 jurors, one alternate juror, have been selected for this ridiculous, lawfare, politically driven, a hush money trial against former President Trump. Thursday's jury selection in this case began with a rocky start after two jurors who had already been seated, they had already been approved for the jury, were dismissed from the case, underscoring the difficulty lawyers are having on finding jurors who can remain impartial. One of the seven already selected jurors, was let go after she told the judge that she now had concerns that she could not be impartial, after friends and colleagues and family members asked her if she was a juror on the case. The juror, a nurse, said she did not believe she could let the outside influences not affect my decision-making in the courtroom. Here's a report on this from NBC.
One of the jurors called up the court to inform them that she did not know whether she could actually be fair and impartial. She was asked to come to court this morning and went before the defense and went before the district attorney's office and answered questions about how she got to that conclusion. And she said, in part, that she got calls just yesterday alone from, quote, friends, colleagues, and family, quote, questioning my identity as a juror. She continued, I don't believe I can be fair and unbiased and let the outside influences not affect me in the courtroom.
That would be the case for every single one of those jurors. The outside influences are absolutely going to affect them. They had to get, if they were going to try this ridiculous thing, they had to get it moved to a different jurisdiction. There's no way they could not have gotten a change of venue here. Donald Trump cannot get a fair trial in Manhattan. And maybe not anywhere, but specifically in Manhattan.
Number eight.
The only gender identity clinic in Scotland has stopped prescribing puberty blockers to new patients under the age of 18, mirroring the action taken by England's health authorities after a landmark review found that people had been, young people had been let down by remarkably weak evidence backing medical interventions in gender care. The report found that the toxicity of the debate around gender identity meant physicians were operating in fear. 23 U.S. states have enacted bans on gender-affirming care, including ours. And again, that term, gender-affirming care, is bogus. It's mutilating kids. Including the prescription of puberty blockers, healthcare providers in five states, Florida, Alabama, Oklahoma, North Dakota, and Iowa, could be charged with a felony if they provide those types of treatments to minors. Good. If they do that kind of thing to kids, that it ought to come with the repercussions that a criminal act should.
Number nine.
And finally, more damage to kids. Planned Parenthood performed more abortions in 2021 and 2022, despite a massive decrease in patients, according to its latest annual report. The abortion provider says they killed 392,715 preborn babies in the fiscal year ending in fall 22. That's more than 5% higher than the number they had performed the previous year. It's also a 20% increase over the organization's last 10 annual reports. Abortions made up more than 97% of Planned Parenthood's pregnancy resolution services. The death squad received nearly $700 million in government grants and reimbursements in the fiscal year to carry out their gruesome, horrendous, torturous murders of kids. And according to the research, Planned Parenthood performed 228 abortions for every adoption referral that they made in 2023. And there you have it.
This has been the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio. AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, have I given you enough grist for the mill? You decide what you want to talk about from the list that we just ran down or from without. It's a free-for-all Friday. Stay here. It's Always Right Radio on AM 1420, The Answer.
And The Answer.
Okay, it is 9:35. Good morning on this Friday. Thank you for joining us. I'm going to talk to Linda Harvey in about 40 minutes or so. And in between now and then, we can talk to you at 216-901-0945. I'm trying to understand Thomas Massie. I really am. I'm the, you know, I just shared the story about the resolution condemning the attack that Iran made against Israel, and 14 people voted against. 13 did not vote for whatever reason. 14 voted against the resolution. 13 Democrats and Thomas Massie. And I just had Thomas Massie on the other day, and we were talking about a lot of very important things upon which we agreed. And I really enjoyed the chat, and I said I wanted to have him back on, but. Now I'm looking at this, and I'm going back and doing just a little bit of recon here and finding out this isn't the first time. Not finding out, but I guess being reminded that it's not the first time. Seth actually brought this up, and I don't understand it. I would never have pegged him as being an anti-Semite, but I just don't know what to make of this. This is dated May 19, 2022. It's from Time, and it's highlighting a vote that was described as a seven-page resolution, a symbolic one, that calls on our government to do all it can to protect Jewish individuals and organizations, to combat denials and distortions about the Holocaust, and to defend the rights of all Americans to practice their faith without fear of violence. The squad even supported this. They voted for the resolution. As a matter of fact, the whole House vote from 2022 on this was 420-1. You guessed it. Thomas Massie, Republican, was the only one who would not vote for that resolution. I'm trying to understand that. As Time writes, as a practical matter, who doesn't believe that the systemic discrimination of individuals, Jewish or not, is worthy of condemnation? And yeah, right? Still trying to figure it out. I mean, it's 2 years later, and I can't figure this out. They pointed to a tweet of his to explain his thinking, and the tweet reads, again from 2022, "I don't hate anyone based on his or her ethnicity or religion. Legitimate government exists in part to punish those who commit unprovoked violence against others. But government can't legislate thought. This bill promoted internet censorship and violations of the First Amendment. Okay. That gives me a little bit more insight. And I do agree that we should not be promoting internet censorship and violations of the First Amendment, clearly. And if that's what this resolution says, when it says the government should do all it can to protect individuals and organizations against, for attacks on them based on their faith, if it meant that people who wrote or tweeted anti-Semitic things would be, punished, then I get it. Because we shouldn't be punishing people for speech. We cannot do that. The moment we greenlight anybody being punished for quote-unquote hate speech, whether it's anti-Jewish hate speech, anti-Islamic hate speech, anti-white person hate speech, which flows all over the internet, anti-black person hate speech, if you start criminalizing it and saying it must be protected, the individuals, the organization, the groups, or the faiths must be protected, and to the extent that people would actually be punished for their thoughts, then I agree we shouldn't do that. So if that is his lone explanation for this particular thing from 2022, we can have that conversation. There is some room for good discussion there. But it doesn't explain this one. Iran bombed Israel. This after Israel. Now, again, they're playing the, hey, it's Israel's fault. They hit with a missile attack on the Iranian consulate in Syria. And it killed four Iranian generals or something like that. And so, therefore, this is Iran's response. It's a tit for tat. Except for the fact that Israel didn't strike the Iranian consulate unprovoked. Iran has been attacking Israel for decades. And literally, more specifically, through Hamas and Hezbollah, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and the Houthis in the last 6 months. It's a constant Iranian barrage on Israel by way of their proxies that they're funding all the time. Israel simply pushes back, and now Iran thinks they're justified in 300 strikes, missiles, rockets, and drone attacks against Israel. That should be condemned, and I don't understand why Representative Massey. We put in a call, right, Seth? You put in a call to Massey's team again?
Yes, we have.
All right. Yeah, we had him on last week. It was a good conversation. I want to have this conversation. Why would you oppose Representative Massey? Why would you oppose a resolution that condemned Iran for attacking our ally, Israel? I would like to know the answer to that question. All right. Phone lines are open at 216-901-0945. Looks like the regulars are out in full force early on here. If you are not a regular, if you're a first-time or a second-time caller, Friday's a great time to get involved. 216-901-0945, just to let you know. We'll go to Charlie first. Hey, Charlie, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hey, Bob. Thank you for taking the call. Mm-hmm. This isn't one of your nine things, but it was a story that came out a couple days ago about who's actually really running the White House. And they explained that the chief of staff, his name is Jeffrey Zeitz or something like that. Hey, he's running things. But the conflict that I'm looking at, I looked him up. He's a billionaire. He owns the biggest mining company in the world for rare earth, for lithium batteries and for electric cars. I go, this is the chief of staff. It's almost as if, the head of Exxon is the chief of staff for a Republican. It's such a conflict of interest. I don't think Biden cares about the climate change at all. I think he's making money selling, making batteries. And no one's looking into this. This, to me, is a total conflict of interest.
Well, I don't think he's running Biden's White House. I think Barack Obama's running Biden's White House. I think Biden just shifted. Remember, Obama once said when he was still president, or maybe it was after president, said, if I could find a way just to kind of, and I'm paraphrasing, have a front man and just kind of run things from behind the scenes, that would be my ideal situation. And poof, poof, here's Joe Biden. So he's really running the show. I've heard about the Jeff Zients and who he is. I don't think he's driving that solely to make money. I do think Biden knows that if he's going to win, he needs to rally every left-wing progressive vote that he can, and that means he has to appeal to the LGBT crew, no matter what. He's got to greenlight everything they want and everything they say. He says he's Catholic, but he's got to appeal to the pro-choice crew, and you know, he has to appeal to the green energy lobby. You know, this massive, you know, group of gangrene idiots who say that the planet is going to die if he doesn't mandate EVs. So I think he's more interested in his own power, and his own interested in being more interested in his own reelection than he is anything else. Money isn't the issue. He's already been extorting enough money from enough countries by way of his son. I don't think he has to worry about money very much. But you know, from a policy standpoint, yeah, this guy does indeed have a conflict of interest. I agree.
And one last thing, I was looking at his wife, I guess, it was really close to Nelson Mandela. And when Nelson got out of prison, he stayed at Nelson stayed at their house. And Nelson Mandela was a communist. I mean, that was his party was the Communist Party of South Africa. And that's what we've got running the White House. This is, to me, it's ridiculous.
All right. Thanks for the call, Charlie. Appreciate it. We'll move on to Shard now. John, you're on AM 1420, The Answer. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Yeah, but addressing Palestine and Hamas and Hezbollah wanting to wipe out Israel off the map, going back to the beginning, 3,000-4,000 years ago, it was Israel who originally occupied these lands. So they have every right to them. And it's the aforementioned groups that they're the invaders.
Yeah, well, you know, they have to justify. Thank you for the call, my friend. The anti-Zionists and anti, you know, Semites, they have to justify their plans or their intentions and their announcements to wipe Israel off the map. They have to justify it somehow, and they can't just do it the way Hitler did it. And just say because they're Jews, they're subhuman, they used to portray them as rats in drawings and things of that nature. They can't just go that way again. So they're going with the, hey, they are occupiers. They stole our land. When 1948 came around and the United Nations recognized Israel, the Israeli state there, that little tiny sliver in that massive area of the Middle East that has been their holy land for thousands of years, always, always, always Israeli land. When the United Nations recognized it, that was all they needed to say, okay, now here's our excuse to wipe out the Jews. The anti-Zionists are anti-Semites. There's a little bit of a difference. Anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism, I mean, they're very much a crossover, but there is a little bit of a difference. Anti-Zionism means the recognition of the state of Israel. They deny the existence of Israel as Israeli holy land. They believe that land belongs to, you know, a whole host of groups that have been part of living there. And they still are, by the way. People think that Israel is entirely Jewish. It's not. There are Arabs live there. There are Muslims who live there. There are even Christians who live there. There are so many different, you know, cross-section of people of other nationalities, too, that actually live or work in Israel. But the bottom line is, to your point, they're looking for a reason, always looking for a reason to wipe out Jews, to eliminate Jews. Look, Hamas makes it clear. It's in their charter. You know, if a Jew is behind you, kill him with a rock. You know, I mean, it'd be on the lookout, kill all Jews. This is what they want to do. But it's bad public policy. It's bad optics to say that stuff out loud. So they say, well, you know, from the river to the sea, Palestine should be free. In other words, that land is our land. It's you know, their colonial, their colonists. They've occupied our land. It's supposed to be ours. And all we're trying to do is get our land back. And in the course of getting our land back, we have to go to war. And that means we have to kill some people and the Jews are going to die. It's, you understand what I'm saying? They want to kill Jews because they hate Jews. That is just a reality of it. Jews have been persecuted for 5,000 years, for crying out loud, and it does continue. And they're using the land, in my view, this is what they're doing, is using the land as a justification for killing the Jews. It's one of the reasons why decent, reasonable people here in the United States should be outraged when you have Hamas. You know, did you see and or hear the Columbia University demonstrations yesterday? Did you see that? You know, here's what they've done. I put this on my Facebook page a little bit earlier this morning. In the 6 months following October 7th and the attacks, in those 6 months, anti-Israel protesters went from, no, we don't support Hamas. we're just Palestinians, to, okay, we do support Hamas, to flat out, we are Hamas. That's literally what they were chanting yesterday. We are Hamas. We are Hamas. Here's one of them, just to give you a little.
We are Hamas.
You're Hamas. Wow. That's a good one. You're what? You're Hamas?
Yes, we're all Hamas, babe.
I have to clip it there because I think there's some profanity right after that as others join in and say, long live Hamas, long live Hamas, and then a few other things as well. These are, you know, and they're wearing their picnic tablecloths around their heads and around their necks. I love their little scarves and little kerchiefs. They do. They just remind me like they took it right off a tablecloth, a checkered tablecloth. Anyway, they're out there, demonstrating, and they are saying, we're not just, free Palestine, free Palestine. We are, and we're not, they're not just saying we are Palestinian, we are Palestinian, Palestinians should be free. They're saying we are terrorists. Hamas is an internationally recognized terrorist organization. This is American soil. They're on American soil saying we are terrorists. And they're doing so freely, without fear, without judgment. We are Hamas. Hamas put babies in ovens and burned them to death. Hamas raped innocent women until their pelvises broke and then killed them on camera, not just any camera, on their own cell phone cameras that they then used to send to everyone in their contact list the images of the person being killed so that all of their friends and family can see the horror. That's who Hamas is. And these people are no longer just saying, we support Palestine and we support Palestinians because Israel is an occupying force. No, they're saying we are Hamas. And that's the reason why, a primary reason why, I said this several weeks ago on the show. I am not outraged at the number of collateral damage Gazan civilian deaths, as some other people are. First of all, because I don't believe the numbers, because they're coming to us from the Hamas Health Ministry, which might as well be Baghdad Bob. But number two, even if the numbers were accurate, I'm sorry when I say this, but I don't believe there are any innocent Gazans. There are no innocent Palestinians. The people in Gaza are just like the people in New York City that I just showed or played for you and that you have probably seen. They occupied the quad at Columbia with tents set up there in the quad for over 30 hours, screaming their hatred for Jews, their hatred for Israel, and their support for Hamas. They're no different in Gaza. They support Hamas. They elected Hamas, then they re-elected Hamas and re-elected them again. And even after October 7th, 74% of them say they support Hamas. And 95% of them say Israel is the one committing war crimes, not Hamas. I don't know if there is such a thing as an innocent Gazan. Except for maybe the children, but the sad truth is the children won't be innocent for very long. Because they're being raised to be anti-Israeli or anti-Jew terrorists themselves. There's three kinds of people in Gaza. There's Hamas, there's family members who support Hamas, and then there are children who are future Hamas. That's the reality of it. And now they're here in the United States on our soil, bragging about how much they not support, but they're saying they are Hamas. They are terrorists themselves. All right, BJ is in North Olmsted. Hi, BJ, you're up, sir.
Well said, Bob. Israel will protect itself with nuclear weapons rather than be destroyed. They are not going to tolerate the destruction of their people and their homeland and the land of the beginning of Christianity for all Christians that are believers. Israel will not be destroyed before it does what it has to do to protect itself. And if it means nuclear weapons, that'll be the case. One more point that's a little different and segue from this.
Mm-hmm.
My heart goes out to all the millions of babies that young girls had to have destroyed because they didn't want to be pregnant. I don't know why we're not educating these young girls on how to protect themselves and young men. We have killed millions of babies. I don't know whose hands that blood is on, but the Creator, whoever created all this life, is not happy with that. Thank you for your time, and God bless you.
Okay, thank you for the call, BJ. Appreciate it. Yeah, that those numbers were pretty staggering, weren't they? I gave them in the top 9 at 9. Planned Parenthood performed more abortions in 2021 and 22 than they have in the last 10 years, despite a massive decrease in the number of patients. What does that mean? If there's a decrease in the number of patients but an increase in the number of abortions, what does that mean? It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure it out. They're coming back. More women are having abortions, getting pregnant again carelessly, and then having another abortion than ever before. They're treating it like birth control. It's like, oh, dang it. Ah, missed my period again, and there it is again. I got another one now. All right. I'll be back. I'm going to stop by the clinic on the way home. I mean, I'm being cavalier about it because that seems to be the case here. They performed more than 390,000 abortions in the fiscal year ending in 2022. That's 18,000 more than the year before. 5% increase. And those are 20% increases over the previous 10 years. Abortions make up 97% of the death squad's services. 97% of Planned Parenthood's pregnancy resolution services are abortions. They do not give them any other options. They do not do anything else to try to assist them. So, yeah, I share your sadness with that, BJ. All right, 216-901-0945. You know what? Let me do this. I was going to take a short break here before the top of the hour, but I'm going to run this to the top of the hour because I want to play this video for you simply because I can dovetail that call from BJ onto this. What does it mean to get pregnant? How does pregnancy occur? Do you think that people who are Gen Zers know this? Do you think that Gen Zers know that you actually still have to have a male and a female uniting to have babies? You might think that they would understand that, but you'd be wrong, at least in some of their cases. I'm going to play a video for you of a man on the street interview situation in which two women, which I'm presuming that they're quote-unquote partners, based on the conversation that they, the answers to the questions that they have here, the question they have been asked is, does society need men? Okay? I want you to listen to their answers.
Society need men.
Yes and no.
No.
So why yes and why no for you? And then I'll ask you why you said no.
Well, because in today's society, sometimes, like, you don't need the male to have a baby anymore.
Yeah.
That's why I would say yes
and no. It's not, like, a moral thing for me. I'm like, we can exist without men only because new research has been discovered of making egg into sperm. So we can reproduce without men. So it's not, like, a moral thing. It's more of, like, a... Like if men just died right now, could we survive? Yes, because of the new research that they're doing, they like, it's possible for like lesbians to have like a baby
without a male sperm.
Right. Yeah. Because they turned it into, you know, a sperm.
They turn eggs into sperm. Now, this is, people sometimes ask me why I'm so vigilant in my coverage of and in my condemnation of this insanity that is the transgender movement. This is why, because like Dr. Piper says, that'll never happen. He can write a book now on all of the things that 10 years ago we said will never happen. They're happening. If you believe that human beings can be whatever sex they want to be, that a male can become a female, that a female can become a male, how would you not believe, like these two repugnant, and you have to see them to know how disgusting they look, These individuals, you wonder why they would think that, males can become females and females can become males. Eggs can become sperm. Did you not know that? The research shows that, yes, eggs.
Society can need men.
Yeah, hold on a second. Hold on a second, you. Eggs can become sperm. They can do that now. Listen to this part again.
That's why I would say yes. Yeah.
It's not like a moral thing for me. Yeah. I'm like we can exist without men only because new research has been discovered of making egg into sperm, so we can reproduce without men. So
I'll just let you marinate in that for a few minutes here as we get our top of the hour news break. We're going to come back and talk to Linda Harvey. Stay here. It's Always Right Radio, AM 1420 The Answer.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420. The Answer. Here's your host, Bob France.
All right, hour number two is underway on this Friday. It is 7 minutes after 10 o'clock. It is the 19th morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024. Hopefully you've got a nice weekend lined up for yourself. So we're going to talk education once again. Sadly, we're going to be fighting some of the very same fights, indoctrination and grooming versus educating our kids. According to Aaron's Law, there is a new regulation that is being filled by Ohio schools following a new Ohio instructional mandate. Aaron's Law requires sex abuse prevention education for children K through 6. And that in and of itself doesn't sound like it's bad, right? I mean, sexual abuse prevention is a good thing. I think preventing sexual abuse is a good thing. Educating children about that kind of thing is good as well. But that doesn't necessarily end the story. The curriculum being recommended by Ohio officials, according to Mission America, to satisfy this requirement, this curriculum is being provided by Second Step, or actually it is called Second Step, which is a prominent provider of SEL, which is social-emotional learning. What is social-emotional learning? If you've listened to Linda Harvey before, you know what this is all about because she has talked about it with us on a number of occasions. But she is here this morning to give us a refresher and to tell us exactly what is going on with Aaron's Law requirements. Linda Harvey, the founder of Mission America, which is a Christian pro-family organization battling and fighting the culture wars. Linda, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Good morning, Bob. It's great to be with you.
It's good to talk to you as well. So before we get into Second Step, let's just talk about what Aaron's Law is. Because, again, the description in your most recent piece on this is to require child sexual abuse prevention. And that sounds fine. We should prevent child sexual abuse. But tell us what this means.
Well, Aaron's Law is it's the one in Ohio is similar to laws that have been passed around the country. And the woman behind it, Erin, is a woman who was sexually abused as a child. And so she was anxious to get laws passed throughout the country. And others have helped her along the way to do this and require this in public schools. Okay, so we're all on board with that idea of preventing child sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, once some people were looking into how this rolled out in other parts of the country, it's a real good open door for all of the agendas you can imagine, Planned Parenthood, all the LGBTQ stuff, and Mission America, as well as Ohio Value Voters, met with legislators when this came out and said, you know, we're all in favor of child sexual abuse prevention. However, this law could easily be manipulated to provide indoctrination and inappropriate teaching, and that's exactly what we're seeing. Because the law requires K through 6 child sexual abuse prevention, and then there's another whole section on sexual violence, dating violence for 7 through 12. But it's the elementary school areas that we're looking at right now, and as you said, Second Step, and their curriculum for this particular subject matter. It's mm-hmm. been found in Strongsville, and one of our diligent Protect Ohio Children researchers found that how they're using it is totally inappropriate.
Okay, let's do a little definition, do a couple of definitions here. Tell us what SEL means, social-emotional learning, and then tell us about Second Step. Give us the definitions of those. Second Step is not an organization, right? It's curriculum.
It's curriculum. It's a program that's owned by what is called the Committee for Children. It's a Seattle-based company. And right off the bat, I would tell you about Second Step is that their CEO is an open lesbian, proud of it, married, quote-unquote, to another woman, and that bias is throughout Second Step. So right off the bat, you know, there's big red flags for me, anyway, and I'm sure for many parents out there. And then, so social-emotional learning is this new framework that the Ohio Department of Education and many other, you know, state bureaucracies throughout the country and even the federal government, they're giving tons of money for. It's the new worldview, frankly, that everybody's trying to adopt and shove into our schools. It's another way of values clarification, you know, trying to help kids deal with conflict better, manage their own emotions better, recognize their own identities better. And we know where that's going. It's an open door for, it could be character education. Let me go back. It could be with the old fashioned character education. However, what we're seeing is that all of the major programs are all infused with all the woke agendas. And so it's a way of indoctrinating kids into all these agendas.
We're talking to Linda Harvey. She is the founder of Mission America. Excuse me. We're talking about Aaron's Law that has gone into effect. And, you know, I mean, obviously, sexual violence, as we both have said right out of the gate, is something that should be prevented. Sexual abuse should be prevented. But when you bring this type of, particularly the LGBTQ variations of sex or sexual discussion, sexual education, you bring that in front of children who are way too young to be learning about sex and really, quite frankly, who I don't think should be taught about it by teachers in the first place. But isn't it a form of sexual abuse to sexualize the minds of young kids and to talk to them about sexual attraction, sexual identification, gender identification, and all of the things we're doing? I'm almost thinking that, you know, what they're doing is as abusive as some of the things that they're trying to prevent.
Exactly right. You've nailed it, Bob, because this was the concern. It's not just that they would be indoctrinated with all of the pro-abortion and pro-LGBTQ material that slipped in, while they're talking to little children about things like safe touches and unsafe touches and your body is your own and those kinds of things. It goes quickly into this idea of identity. Your body is your own. You have the right to say no. Well, guess what? The flip side of that, and that's how the leftist indoctrinators are using this, is that you, little child, also have the right to say yes. And so then, yes to what? Exactly right. This is a way of sexualizing children. It's destroying their innocence. Yeah, there are kids out there who need this on a one-on-one basis. We have mm-hmm. children who are in the midst of these situations. Mm-hmm. So we're walking a fine line here. But when you introduce sexual topics, you are automatically proposing things and introducing concepts in children's minds that they're way too young to handle, most of them. So I think there's a different way to handle the child abuse, sexual abuse prevention, but I don't think we're addressing this in the right way right now. And one of the, as you were saying, Second Step, and there are several others that I have big red flags about on the Ohio Department of Education and Workforce on their website. So this is what they're recommending.
So when we're talking about some of the behaviors and some of the descriptions and discussions that are part of this curriculum, some of it will sound familiar to us, people who are in my generation and the Gen X generation and probably many others. They'll know what spin the bottle is. They'll know what truth or dare is because they did them themselves. Usually, though, these are things that happen when you're in your teens. Age appropriateness is the key here, right? Because you write this in your article on Mission America about the Committee for Children and some of the things that they encourage kids to do as a part of this sexual, you know, education, if you will, is kids between the ages of 7 and 12 encouraged to masturbate, quote, usually in private, which means sometimes not, play games involving sexual behavior such as truth or dare and spin the bottle, trying to see people without their clothes on, looking at pictures of people who are naked or just with a few clothes on, et cetera, et cetera. Many of these things, again, we played spin the bottle, we've played truth or dare, and some of these things are a part of, growing up in your teens, but this is way, way, way younger than what we're talking about. Is age appropriateness the real key here?
Yes, and also, you know, you have to remember that a lot of things that go on with kids are things that, yes, they're normative. You can find that kids will do these things. But when you have so-called experts saying, don't worry about this, you know, and putting it in writing on their website to advise teachers and parents, then these are the experts. It becomes, it has an imprimatur, if you will, you know, a recommendation by experts. So parents who should be alarmed if they're, you know, they have children running around trying to see people without their clothes on, they may be saying, well, I really shouldn't be alarmed by that. Well, yes, you should. 7 to 12-year-olds should not be, I mean, this is not the direction you want your child to go. I think many people will automatically see that. So when you read some of this background on the Committee for Children, as you just did, your red flags go up and say, I don't want these people teaching my kids. I don't want any curriculum from these folks at all. And not their second step social emotional learning material either.
Linda, I mentioned the 7 to 12 part of this in your article and some of the things that the kids are expected to do. But in one paragraph above that, which I missed, we're talking about much younger, right?
Oh yes.
CFC, the Committee for Children, considers typical sexual behavior of children ages 2 to 3 years old to include the following, quote, explore and touch their own genitals and show them to others, end quote, and, quote, rub their genitals on purpose, masturbate, end quote, and children ages 4 to 6 years of age can be expected to, quote, sometimes masturbate in front of others and can have orgasm, end quote. This is 2 to 3 and 4 to 6, for crying out loud. I thought pushing the envelope at 7 to 12 was really, really bad. I mean, they're literally suggesting that this be taught to children, that this is normal behavior at those ages?
Right. I think what they're saying is if you observe this with your children, but who knows? Maybe they think people should be taught this. I don't know. That this is normative, and there's another whole column that only says what the things to be alarmed about are. And it's only if you can't get children to do this in private, when it's appropriate, that you'd like them to rather, you know, please take your masturbation into private, Johnny, rather than doing this in front of, you know, your grandma and all your friends. These are not people I want in front of my kids. This is not normal development. We need to, you know, steer kids away from focusing on being sexualized at an early age and believing that, maybe, you know, what you could end up with is parents who think, well, my children are not doing that. Maybe there's going to be something wrong with them as they grow up. No, I mean, this is not what we should be focusing on. This is very, very misleading.
Yeah, it is. It's very disturbing, too. And I'm going to encourage people to read this article for themselves in more detail. It's at missionamerica.com. Missionamerica.com. The headline for this one is Preventing Abuse or Sexualizing Children. And obviously, we both agree and we all agree, I'm sure, we want to do whatever we can do to prevent abuse, but not at the expense of sexualizing kids at these very young ages, and trying to draw distinctions between typical and normative behavior and what it would be a cause for concern is really, really alarming, the way that they are presenting all of this. You write in here, and a lot of people already know about Alfred Kinsey, but for those who don't know about him, the sex researcher, you said he would love this stuff. Can you explain that?
Oh, yes. This is right down the alley of what started with the infamous Alfred Kinsey at Indiana University and he's got the Kinsey Institute. It's still going on over there, although a lot of it has been dismantled. But he did so much harm in this country. He supposedly researched male and then female sexual behavior. But as part of his research, he had he himself is suspected to have been a pedophile. He conducted all kinds of group sex, so-called research, with his wife and other faculty members there, and they would talk about it and document it and observe each other. And there was that going on all the time while he was at Indiana University. But then he also wrote down what he thought was normative for children. And what he wrote down and reported on was that children are sexual from birth, and he supposedly had research, quote-unquote, that children, very small children, had orgasms. Well, what he was doing was this was criminal behavior. These were children being raped, and he was reporting on this. Some of it may have been true. Some of it probably was true. Some of it is suspected to have been done in Nazi Germany by a pedophile of children in concentration camps. And he reported that this is normative behavior, as these guys are there. There was a second researcher there, supposedly, who, you know, documented these children doing, you know, being stimulated and having these reactions. And who knows if it happened or not, but if it did, it was rape. He was reporting criminal behavior as scientific research. And so much public policy regarding sexuality, regarding children, has been based on this. And all of the leftist organizations, Planned Parenthood, CECUS, there's another one, I'm Advocates for Youth, GLSEN, all of these are based on this idea that children are sexual from birth, and it's an old-fashioned Judeo-Christian concept that needs to be eliminated, that children are innocent for a period of time and need to be, that innocence needs to be protected, and that they cannot be sexual and choose their own sex partners and activities. That is where our society is going, and it all started with Alfred Kinsey.
Linda Harvey is our guest. She's the founder of Mission America. Linda, I always like to ask questions about origin and intent. You gave us some of the origin of some of this. What is the goal? What is the intent? Is it simple perversion? Are these adults, professional adults, scientists and psychologists and so on and so forth, who are trying to outlaw or erase that, like you said, the forever Judeo-Christian values of innocent children, saying no, they're sexual from birth? Is it because of their own perversions? What do they get out of this? I always ask that question whenever I see bizarre behaviors or policies or things like this being promoted, is what are you getting out of this?
Well, the thing that people have to realize is there's a whole spectrum of people who are drawn into this, and some are as hardcore as you're talking about, who are very much interested in sexualizing children because they themselves are extremely messed up and weird and people we don't want our children anywhere near. But some are, again, they are drawn into the more innocuous seeming beginning parts of some of this training, and then just go along with the rest of it and don't stand up because they don't have a good set of values. Whole education institution, all the institutions, the education, schools of education in academia are filled with this leftist idea of children, period, empowering children. Of course, that means dismissing parental rights.
Yeah.
And they think this is the way we should go. They think this is progress. And many of these people are young and they don't have children yet, so they haven't gone through this. So they don't really know, haven't grasped the harm they can do.
Well, Linda, I'm so glad that you wrote this, and I'm so glad you're telling people about it. Last question for you is, you mentioned Strongsville in the early going there. Is that the only district here in Northeast Ohio that we're aware of that is adopting this Aaron's Law curriculum?
I am not aware that others are adopting the specific second step.
Second step.
Every school system has to teach this somewhere. So probably many of them are going to the Ohio Department of Education's recommended, and there are only four or five curricula on there. So there are going to be more that come up. But we know Second Step itself as an SEL program is in Strongsville. It's in Brunswick. It's in West Geauga. Those are the northeastern. Mm-hmm. There are some others in Ohio. Those are the Northeast Ohio school districts that have Second Step. So I would assume they're going to use the Second Step child sexual abuse prevention curriculum as well. And others are probably using them as well. We're just now uncovering this. Protect Ohio Children is on top of that, and I'm a board member there as well, and honored to be so, and we'll be continuing to report on that.
Well, I think one of the other important parts about this is, as you said, this is recommended by the state of Ohio, the Department of Education and Workforce. And I'm looking at the link, which is connected to your article or linked to your article about this. And I guess all I can say is contact our legislators, right? Contact our state reps and state senators and to tell them we cannot allow this. This child abuse prevention curriculum that is being recommended or promoted by the state of Ohio is abusive to children. It is.
Right.
As much as it's intended to prevent abuse, it's abusive in a different way to kids, sexualizing them in such ways at such young ages. It's something that cannot be allowed to stand. I don't know exactly what it would take, what kind of legislation it would take to stop this, but I think we need to inquire with our representatives, right?
Yes, we sure do. We absolutely do. And thank you so much for reporting on this, Bob, and letting the word get out.
Well, thank you for getting the information to us, Linda. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, there's Linda Harvey with Mission America. And thanks to Ohio Value Voters, by the way, who work very closely with Mission America. And they shared this information with me as well, which is what led us to booking Linda for today. I'm just looking at the Ohio Department of Education and Workforce, and there it is. Requirements for Ohio schools and child sex abuse prevention. And here is a list of the recommended curriculum, instructional supports, and resources. And they do include everything that Linda just told us about. Absolutely astounding. Time out. Bottom of the hour news. We'll come back. We got time for open phone calls until we have another guest at 11:10. So this next half hour plus is yours. 216-901-0945. 888-281-1110. What's on your mind? What questions, comments do you have? Join me on AM 1420.
The Answer.
Okay, 10:35, good morning to you. Thank you for being with us. 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. Those are the phone numbers to join us. We had a lot of good stuff to talk about. Well, bad stuff, but good conversation with Linda Harvey from Mission America. If you missed that, go back and listen to it later on at WHKRadio.com about an hour after the show. So we had a very thorough top 9 at 9 that we went through this morning, and a lot of different things to ask you about. If you've got questions, or I'm sorry, to hear from you about, if you've got questions or comments to make on any of those, hit us up at that phone number, as I mentioned. The one that hits you probably the most today, and I can say this as a person who's got 48 miles left on his truck, and my wife told me yesterday she needs to get gas. She's got 50 miles left on her car. We got to go fill up today. And she literally, pull it up here. Let's see, from yesterday. I only have 50 miles. I'm looking at my text. I only have 50 miles on my gas, and it's so freaking expensive right now. And I sent her a picture of my dash that said 48 left on mine. And I get it. And it is going to be expensive, and it's going to take a giant chunk out of our checking account when I go to the gas station later today for both of those vehicles. And Joe Biden doesn't give one flying freaking rip. This is one of my top 9 at 9, and it's one of the most frustrating things for me. And again, I know we're all talking about Israel, and I know we're all talking about education. We're talking about other things that are bigger picture, macro type level stuff. But this is micro. This is going to hit you today if you go fill up today. It's going to hit you tomorrow. The Biden administration has killed the exploration of 13 million acres of public land, which were designated for exploration for natural resources. The National Petroleum Reserve. It's in the name. The National Petroleum Reserve is 13 million acres of public land that is designated for exploration for oil and natural gas. That's what it's there for. The Department of Interior yesterday said, too bad. We're taking it back. You can't have it. You can't have that exploration because we don't want you to be able to drill for oil. We don't want you to be able to drill and explore and eventually frack for natural gas. We don't want you doing any of that stuff. Why? Because they want to force us into China's back pocket. And I'm sorry to say it that way. Again, I talk about origins of thought. I talk about intention. I talk about goals. I talk about landing points all of the time. What's the motivation here? Why is Biden continuing to assault the energy industry in this country, particularly the fossil fuel industry. I play this all the time, this clip of Joe Biden essentially saying, I'm going to bankrupt the fossil fuel industries. And he doesn't give a flying you-know-what about how many jobs, how many American jobs in the fossil fuel industry would be lost if he is successful in such an endeavor, but moreover, how much it's going to cost you and me in the process. Every one of us is going to pay the price when he does things like this. And again, it's not an accident. It is being described as one of the most aggressive maneuvers he's made in 3.5 years now as president, or 3 years plus as president. Again, to effectively kiss the rear end of the green lobby, to kiss the rear end of the gangrene climate nuts who are blocking our bridges and blocking traffic and gluing themselves to sporting surfaces and sporting events and museums and everything else. It is literally giving them everything that they want. And the end goal here, or excuse me, the end game here, whether it's the goal or not, is it's going to put all of us into China's back pocket. How and why? Because China controls the drilling, the acquisition of the rare earth minerals in Asia and in Africa to get things like the lithium and the cobalt and the manganese and the nickel and the graphite and the copper and all of the different things that are needed to build those car batteries. They build them there or ship those things up to Mexico and build them in Mexico and then sell them in the United States for, you know, twice the cost of a regular internal combustion engine car. We're going to end up in the pockets of the Chinese because of all of this. And again, it was an intentional decision.
Would there be any place for fossil fuels, including coal and fracking, in a Biden administration?
No, we would work it out. We would make sure it's eliminated.
No more drilling on federal lands. No more drilling, including offshore. No ability for the oil industry to continue to drill, period.
I guarantee you. We're going to end fossil fuel.
What about, say, stopping fracking and stopping new pipeline infrastructure?
No more, no new fracking.
We are going to get rid of fossil fuels.
I've argued against any more oil drilling or gas drilling on federal lands.
No one's going to build a coal-fired plant again, and we're going to get rid of the ones we have now.
Have a transition from the oil industry, yes.
Would you be willing to sacrifice some of that growth, even knowing potentially that it could displace thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of blue-collar workers in the interest of transitioning to that greener economy?
The answer is yes.
The answer is yes. He's made it very, very clear. This is not, and I hate it sounded like KJP there. This is not an accident, and this is not limited. There is literally no end to what they won't do to destroy the internal combustion engine, the fossil fuel industry, and ultimately, the entire economy of the United States. How and why? Because our infrastructure will have to be completely overhauled, something we absolutely cannot afford at a $34.5 trillion national debt right now. They're going to have to retrofit virtually everything. Everything, if they were to go forward with this ridiculous mandate.
I want to stop all drilling on the East Coast and the West Coast and in the Gulf.
I want to stop all drilling in the East Coast, the West Coast, and the Gulf, and now in the National Petroleum Reserve, 13 million acres in Alaska. Somebody explain this to me like I'm a four-year-old because I can't understand it. This push toward EVs, I mean, the economic impact cannot even be described. The automotive industry itself is going to, that's why so many of them, by the way, who have already kind of embraced this because they saw it coming, like Ford 3 years ago, started a massive move toward the majority of its vehicles being produced being EVs. They've pulled back on all of that now because they realize they're not selling. People can't buy them because they're too expensive. They can't afford it. And once they're mandated, now we'll have to buy them, and they're going to end up having to take out, you know, basically mortgage-sized loans to buy cars. It's one thing to take a 60- or 72-month loan out on a car right now, but, I mean, seriously, you're going to get into a situation where you can't afford to pay the car payments in a 5- or 6-year period that it's going to take to buy an EV. You're going to end up having to have mortgage-style loans. They're going to be out for 10 or 15 years. Of course, the cars only last 6 or 7 years, tops. And when the batteries go, they have to be replaced at a cost of about half of the cost of the car when it was new. So consumers cannot handle this. And again, there's the technical limitations. We talk about these things all the time because I want you to know what is being done to us by the current leadership. And we have 6.5 months to figure out how to stop it. Meaning getting this guy the hell out of office and changing all of the policies that he has put in place here in his war on fossil fuels, claiming that the country and the planet cannot survive any more, you know, oil usage and so forth. Battery technology is so limited in terms of and not to mention the disposal of these batteries once they do expire. They cannot be repurposed, for crying out loud. Same thing with the wind turbines. The strain on the, when I talk about infrastructure, what am I talking about? Do you know how unprepared the electrical grids we have are right now for a really hot summer in significant numbers of areas of this country? You get a really hot summer, the electrical grid can't handle it because too many air conditioners are clicking on, and they have rolling brownouts and blackouts in Texas and in New Mexico and Arizona and California. I know. I lived through some of them. They can't handle it as it is now. Now put, I can't even put a number on it, the exponential increase in strain on the electrical grids if we all have to plug in our cars. If the millions upon millions of American vehicles are converted to EVs, if you can find a charger, the grid would never be able to handle it. We would our refrigerators would be going out. We'd all be buying what? If they still allow the sale of them, we'd be buying gasoline-powered generators to keep our refrigerators running when the brownouts and blackouts happen. But I don't even know if they'll let those be available anymore. The strain on the electrical grid, it's just insane to me. But anyway, here's the news story. Joe Biden literally saying no more drilling in the National Petroleum Reserve. It's in the name. It's specifically for petroleum reserve. So this kind of thing just, I like to hit the bigger picture things, but I like to hit the things that are going to hit you directly today, too. I'm going to spend between what it costs to fill up the truck and my wife's car, we're probably looking around $150. Maybe $130, $140 to fill up two vehicles today. You think about that. You think about what that's going to do to the average middle American household, middle class, I mean. Think about what your paycheck looks like on a Friday. Think about how much money they're taking out of your paycheck, by the way, to send to Volodymyr Zelensky in Ukraine. Think about how much money they're taking out of your paycheck to fund these left-wing pet projects. Think about all of that. Then what's left, you've got to find a way to pay for that gas that is $3.75 a gallon right now to obviously meet your extraordinarily new high mortgage and rental rates because of the Biden administration in inflation. And they've had to raise those rates to combat inflation, as you know. Every single element of your personal financial life is being hit in the face by Joe Biden. Not just Joe Biden, but as I said to a previous caller, Barack Obama running the Joe Biden presidency from behind the scenes. It is just blasting you in the face, crippling your own personal finances, your own personal budgets, making you more and more dependent on credit to the point where you're going to end up bankrupt and the entire economy crashes, and it makes it that much easier, excuse me, for the left to advance their goal of globalism. The United States cannot stand on its own. It's going to have to require help from other countries, and away we go. It's going to be a one-world global government. And yes, every decision like killing the natural petroleum reserves acreage, if you will, for exploration, every single one of those moves is geared toward the end game of destroying American independence. First, energy independence, then economic independence. That's just the reality of it. All right, it's 10:47. I need a timeout. It's 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. Your call's next.
Hobbs.com.
Okay, 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. Those are the numbers to dial us on this free-for-all Friday. Whatever you want to ask or comment on, this is your shot. Steve in Collinwood. Hello, Steve. Go ahead.
Yeah, I like what you were saying about the
the brainwashing industry, what they're doing to the kids.
Yes.
And how really dangerous it is, because it starts behavior modification. You know, they make things okay. And I'll give you an example. In Gaza, Hamas had control of the education for a good 13 to 17 years, every facet of education and society. And they were able to, through the brainwashing, they were able to produce a generation of young people that were able to do unspeakable things, you know, mutilating people and murdering people and doing things that, those people thought that it was perfectly okay. You know, there was one kid, he called home on the first day to his father, proud that he had, you know, killed 10 Jews. So, but to produce, and that's all through the brainwashing industry. And it starts, they're doing it innocuously because the kids can't defend themselves. They don't know what's going on here. But it's the same thing. And they can produce a generation of people that could do unspeakable things even here. And
yeah. Well, the fact that the first part happened, which you just described, and you're right, there were young people who were bragging, calling their parents about, I just killed 10 Jews. The fact that those people don't bring about a sense of revulsion and disgust in people, no matter what your ethnicity is or what your religion is here, and instead people say, yeah, I'm like that guy. We are Hamas. That lets you know that, yes, they have been brainwashed, and they've been brainwashed here on American soil. Not all of these people are immigrants from, you know, from the Middle East, you know, from Gaza or from Egypt or from anywhere else that, for that matter. Many of them are born here, but they are still raised with the indoctrination of their faith and of their ethnicity to hate Jews. And that's why they're literally saying, we are Hamas, we kill Jews.
Yeah, many of them are Jewish kids, which is even more surprising. That's the strength of that whole industry. The last thing I wanted to say is when I grew up, I took an oath for the Boy Scouts, and that was do my duty and do my best to help the Girl Scouts get undressed.
Oh, my God. Well, it's a fun little rhyme, and thanks for the call. I appreciate it, and it is harmless. And you know, here's what's really sad. Thanks for the call, Steve. Here's what's really sad, and I mean this very, very seriously. That should be funny, and it is kind of, just like, you know, all of the other young kid rhymes, you know, the glory, glory, hallelujah, the teacher hit me with a ruler, I bopped her on the bean with a rotten tangerine, her teeth came marching out. Those things used to be funny. Now you have kids knocking the teeth out of teachers' mouths, legitimately and literally. Now you have little kids being encouraged to be sexually active at a very young age and to declare their sexual orientation or intent or own identity, as a matter of fact, to the point where the little Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts rhyme now makes you cringe a little bit. Right? How sick is that? It's truth. It's true, though. The things that we used to just think, you know, be harmless, things that are harmless are no longer harmless. They're very, very harmful. And to the first part of the call about these radicalized, brainwashed kids, Alan Dershowitz went on Hannity yesterday and described them another way.
Not like pro-Palestine. This is not pro-Palestine. This is pro-Hamas, which is anti-Palestine. The worst enemy that the Palestinian people have is Hamas. These kids are Hitler youth.
That's the best description of them all. They've been brainwashed into becoming Hitler youth.
These are the same kind of people who brought Hitler to power in 1933, Castro to power, Pol Pot to power, Mao Tse-tung to power. Just because they're young doesn't mean they're not extremely, extremely dangerous. What they're doing is providing aid to a terrorist organization. Can you imagine a university allowing people to have a parallel chant to From the River to the Sea? Imagine them saying, from the Atlantic to the Indian Ocean, South Africa will be free of blacks, and let's return South Africa to white apartheid rule.
He's right. That's what it would be like. Pick any other ethnicity, or in the case of Judaism, religion, replace it, you know, replace Judaism with any other ethnicity or race or religion. And oh my gosh, how you, I cannot believe you're saying that. But from the river to the sea, Palestine shall be free is allowed. It's acceptable speech on college campuses, at protests. And while I am absolutely free speech supportive, and I'm not saying people should be punished for expressing their opinions, threatening speech and calling for genocide, calling for the extermination of a race, is something we have seen before. And that cannot be tolerated. Very, very limited and very, very specific exceptions exist to the First Amendment. That would be one of them. If anybody said this about blacks in South Africa or here in the United States, for that matter, it would just be, it would be beyond the pale. It would never be allowed. But you say it about Jews and it's free speech. And these are just pro-Palestinians opposed to the colonization of their land and the occupation of their land. And they have a right to feel a certain kind of way. No, they really do not. 10:58, we're coming up on the top of the hour news. We've got more coming up on AM 1420, The Answer.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, it is 7 minutes after 11 o'clock, and hour number three is underway on this Friday. It's the 19th morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024, and we appreciate you being with us. So we'll get back to some free-for-all Friday phone calls here shortly, but I want to talk about the Declaration of Independence now. Kind of, sort of, but not really, not that declaration, the Redeclaration of Independence. Barry Hinckley is the great-grandson of Colonel James Barrett, commander of the Minutemen, who engaged the British in 1775 at the North Bridge in Concord, Massachusetts. The mission of the Redeclaration of Independence, as I understand it, is to return our nation to the constitutional republic we once were, and our government to we the people. And Barry Hinckley joins us now to talk about the Redeclaration of America. Barry, good morning. It's good to have you. How are you?
It's good to be with you on this Patriots Day, Bob.
Yes, indeed, it is. So let's celebrate that a little bit. First of all, before we start talking about the Redeclaration of Independence, Barry, explain to people, because, you know, many people, not I wouldn't say most, but many people, we think about our founding documents and we refer to the Constitution, rightfully so. It's the basis for all of our laws and our system of government in this country. But the Declaration itself, and in particular the, in my opinion anyway, the role that faith played in the Declaration of our Independence as written by our founding fathers, that is something that I think is lost on a lot of people.
Well, I completely agree, Bob. In fact, I wrote an article a couple weeks ago. I think I published it on Substack 2 weeks ago today, entitled Do We Choose Bondage or Faith? And the reason I did is because our founders took an immense amount of time, as you know, writing the Constitution. In fact, it was a 13-year project. And I think what is so important about today being Patriots Day, when, you know, my great-grandfather, you know, confronted the British at the North Bridge, and of course the Declaration of Independence. You know, where we are, we have these unalienable rights that are granted to us by God, not by men. And the important thing is, our founders knew that, which is why they included God in our Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Because if this had just been a bunch of men And when the women supported them, because many, of course, did, because the whole family was at risk when the British were in play. They didn't just punish you if you were in the militia. They punished your whole family and burned your house to the ground. So, you know, everyone was at risk taking power or essentially taking their liberty back from the British Empire. And if this would have just been an exercise of people taking power from other people, if they didn't do one thing that changed this country and made it the greatest experiment in human history, and that was when our founders got power from England, our liberty, you know what they did? They gave it back to the people immediately because they knew that there was a higher power than men. They knew that we were directed by God. And that's why it's in our Constitution, and that's why he's in our Declaration of Independence.
It is a great summary, and it's so important for people to know or to be reminded of, I guess. I would hope that we still – you think they teach this stuff in government schools anymore? Do they teach anything about the Declaration other than the date that it happened, the year, and that's it?
Well, you know, when you're open, the hair on my arm stood up when you give the open, because I was taught all these things in school. Of course, I was interestingly, I'm not only related to, you know, Colonel James Barrett, but I was born on April 18th, which is yesterday, and the day that, you know, Paul Revere left and Dr. Prescott and Dawes left Boston and to alert the Minutemen in Concord the British were coming to, you know, arrest them. I was taught this partly because it was family history, but also because it was a New England thing. I mean, Patriot's Day was a big deal in New England. It's not so much so anymore. It's just another holiday, sadly. And I think that's one of the things we need to focus on. And maybe your listeners will agree with us on this, that I feel like too many people are engrossed in pursuing life and happiness, but they're skipping the liberty part. If you don't tithe for liberty, if you don't invest in liberty, our children won't have it. I mean, there's, as you know, and I heard in your open, the country is headed in a horrible direction, and we're only going to take it back and get it back to the path that it was intended by our founders if we take action. And hopefully the Redeclaration of Independence will be an inspiration for people to do something simple but have an impact.
Yeah, that's a great description. And we are headed in a bad direction. I played a clip a couple of days ago from Joe Scarborough, who was screaming at everybody on Morning Joe, like literally screaming about how sick and tired he is of all of these so-called patriots talking about how bad America is, talking about how, you know, berating and condemning the country. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, we're not berating the country. We are the ones who are trying to save the country. We're trying to restore the country to what it was. We are not ashamed of our country the way he led it to, you know, the rant, you know, kind of was steered in that direction. We are the ones trying to preserve it. We're talking about how upset we are with the direction of the country, that we have lost the freedoms that those founders so courageously and so extraordinarily, inspirationally gave us. And, you know, freedoms and liberties that were, you know, again, the old adage of watering the tree of liberty with the blood of patriots for all of these last 2.5 centuries, we're watching it come undone. We're the ones who want to restore it. We don't hate America. We love America. We hate what is happening to America. And there's a big difference there.
Well, I have a letter for Joe Scarborough. It starts like this. Dear Joe, what is going well? Signed, Barry Hinckley. what is going well? We're $34 trillion in debt. All of our entitlement programs, these are benefits we've promised to generations of Americans, decades of Americans, are functionally bankrupt. Our schools, we spend at the top of all industrialized nations educating our kids when we have the worst outcomes of the top 32 industrialized nations. We're in the bottom four. Right? You know, our cities are falling apart. And I can tell you something. You can gauge the health of a country by how well run their cities are, because that's the difficult stuff. When you're managing millions of people in a tightly packed area, you can tell if a country has their act together or not. And just go to any American city right now, major American city, you can tell we don't. Things are not going well, Joe Scarborough, and they're not going well because I can't find a policy that the left has that works. And I'm with you 100%, Bob. All we're doing is pointing out that things are broken, and maybe we have some different, we should take some different tacks on how to get things back on track. And I believe it all comes back to the Constitution. Let's take the First Amendment, for example. It's 45 words long. We have 5 basic freedoms in those 45 words. Try to get a lawyer to write that today. That's how good and pure this document is. And that when things, you know, we all know when things get pear-shaped and go bad, you always go back to the basics. And that's what we're trying to do with the Redeclaration of Independence. We're trying to remind people that we have a pure document in the Constitution. our founders were geniuses, and they made accommodation to amend it as we evolve as a country, and that's all there. If you want to change, we can get an amendment. We already have, you know, almost 30 of them. And then, of course, yeah, you get back to the simplicity of those basics, and we can get this country back on track.
You know, Barry, Barry Hinckley is our guest, and Barry is calling for the redeclaration of independence on this Patriots Day. And again, he's the primary drafter of this. To answer your question, when you ask Joe Scarborough the same thing you might ask Joe Biden, what is going well, they'll have an answer. And they'll say, well, what's going well is that this country is now living up to its mission in providing opportunity for more people than ever before. I mean, look at the 10 million people who have been seeking asylum from the oppression that they have been suffering in their own countries, who have come here looking for the opportunity in the greatest country in the world, and we have allowed them in. That's what's going good. Equity of opportunity is here now. It never was before, but more people of color and people of marginalized status are getting opportunities now because of DEI. That's what's going well here. The rich are paying more than they've ever paid before in taxes under Biden's tax policies. White supremacists are being marginalized and limited in their effectiveness now more than ever before because of the new policies. That's what's going well. That's what they would say to you, Barry, if you ask Joe Scarborough, you ask me, every single one of those is a lie. Every single one of those is backwards, but that's what they'll say.
Well, I was going to say, Bob, we're going to need a much longer segment to address all of those falsehoods.
You're right.
They're not going well. You know, ask the average family that's struggling to get their kid into a school that's safe. You know, I mean, the failure of our schools, for example, is another symptom of our failure. And all of these fancy people, Joe Scarborough and Mika and all these other wealthy elites that are running the country, you know, guess where their kids go to school? Not the public schools. They opt out because they have tons of money and they can go pay $60,000, $70,000 a year to go to public school. And that is just a form of a tax that the average working family does not have the money to pay. And that in itself is the most glaring inequity, or one of the most glaring inequities in the world, is the fact that if you want a good education, you got to go pay tens of thousands of dollars out of pocket to get one, because most likely the school in your neighborhood is failing or corrupt or both.
Yeah, well, the schools are another story altogether. You know, it used to be, and we've known for a few decades now about the radicalism at the university level, at the higher education levels. But the radicalism now is not even just at the high school level, but it's in the middle schools. And obviously, with some of the stuff they're doing with the sexualization of kids and trying to get kids to declare different identities at the primary school level, Barry, we're in a place now where, if we don't do what you're talking about here with the redeclaration of independence and restoring our constitutional republic and the government to we the people, we may never get a change, because they have grabbed the future generations at a very, very young age. The indoctrination, the brainwashing that is going on right now is going to have a very, very long-lasting impact if we don't find a way to nip this. Not that it's really even in the bud anymore, but if we don't get this under control quickly.
Well, a couple things here. First of all, Lenin did say, if give me your children for 4 years and I'll have them for life, right? And he was referring to the education system. And the CIA, in its own documentation, has revealed the fact that through repeated misinformation, you can brainwash 35% of any population. Sadly, that's the game we're playing. I mean, I'm an exile. I live in Florida. I'm formerly from New England, where my wife and I consider ourselves exiles, because we had to come down here so we could actually speak our mind, because it got so oppressive up there. You couldn't even speak a divergent opinion. It was fully authoritarian. So, you know, sadly, they've been working. That's why one of the reasons I wrote the Declaration of Independence. You know, the hard left, you know, first they invaded the education system, and then they invaded, you know, the government workers. And then they invaded the university system, and then they invaded, you know, now they're invading the military, which is why you see all wokeness in the military. And that's the last stop. And that's, you know, one of the 10 tenets in our redeclaration, of course, is ending wokeness in the military. Because once they woke out the military, they've got every major institution in America woked out. That's when the brainwashing really takes effect, because there's no safe haven of dialogue anymore. And we're not a meritocracy anymore. We're all about political correctness and wokeness, and you can't run a country that way. America was founded because people came here. They wanted a better opportunity, and they came from oppression. if this place goes and all the new and legal immigrants, first or second generation, they're here in America, will tell you the same thing. We're in Florida now. We had a conversation with two different Cuban families last night. They're scared to death that we're going to become what Cuba became. Venezuelans are in the same boat. They saw it. They know what socialism and Marxism does. It ruins countries. And if we don't draw a line in the sand and get involved, you know, that's, again, why we wrote the Redeclaration of Independence. All you have to do is go to redeclaration.org. We have 10 simple tenets, from term limits to balanced budget to securing our borders, securing our elections. I think they all pass the 80-20 test. And just sign it. You can even sign anonymously. But we need millions of Americans to stand up and be heard, because the people in Washington, D.C. that are running the show, they won't listen to us unless we stand up in mass. I know that. I ran for U.S. Senate. I know how the place works.
Well, I'll tell you, we're talking to Barry Hinckley, and Barry, as he just pointed out, is now in Florida. He did run for the United States Senate from Rhode Island about 10, 12 years ago now, and he's been exiled to Florida. I'm sure you're a loving life down there under the governance of Ron DeSantis, much, much more than you would be back up in the Northeast. I'm looking at the webpage right now at redeclaration.org, and I want to talk a little bit about some of your colleagues there. Who are these folks? I see David Negley Scaife, Albert Pyatt, Bill McCauley, Fred Stuvek. Who are these individuals, and how did you come together?
Well, if you read the page, you'll see that the first three of us, David and I and Rob, are high school friends. Mm. And we reconnected in life and stayed connected, but reconnected, you know, as we got a little older and found out we had more in common. Rob is actually a career federal employee, and he's realized how rotten the government has gotten, and he's disgusted by it and the waste. Dave is, we share a passion for the Constitution, and we got together and we thought we'd do something. You know, this was inspired by a speech that Tucker Carlson gave in September in Wilmington. It's called the famous Wilmington speech at the ISI Institute, about oddly 5 miles from Biden's house. And, where he asked us to stay, he asked the audience to stand up and be brave and do something, because if we don't, we're going to lose the Republic. So this was our effort to stand up and be brave. Bill and Fred are friends of mine and mentors that are Naval Academy graduates, and they're part of the Calvert Group, which is a Naval Academy alumni group, which is focused on ending wokeness in the military. So, you know, the five of us got together and collaborated on this.
So are you guys the new Minutemen?
I don't know. Sure, I mean, I don't know if I could take that honor. If we get the millions of signatures that we want, Bob, then you can call me a Minuteman. How's that?
Well, the fact that you are sounding the alarm, which is, of course, what they did on your birthday, and by the way, happy birthday, one day belated, the day that the riders left, to alert everybody, that's exactly what you guys are doing right now, alerting people to the dangers if we don't flip this around now and redeclare our independence, as you guys have written here. And so these 10 tenets are extraordinarily important, and I love the mission. I want to send more people to redeclaration.org, just like it sounds, redeclaration.org. And there's a petition at the bottom of the page, the home page, to sign this. And where does the petition go, Barry?
Well, it just goes to us. We don't share the names with anyone. My friends and I are funding this ourselves. We're not going to ask you for money. We're paying for all of this, all the effort, all the marketing ourselves. We're just collecting the group of names, and we keep your emails, and we communicate with you weekly on how it's going and the updates and keeping people reminded that they have to, you know, if you're signing, just you have to forward it to your friends and family, post it on social media, and ask them to sign too, so we can make this thing, you know, go viral. That's really, it's just with us. That's where the petition, and, you know, starts and ends. And, of course, the whole goal is representative and candidate accountability. Because, you know, Bill Clinton, obviously not a man of high moral character, but he did famously say, a politician will never start the parade, but they will jump out in front with a baton if you do. And this is our effort to start that parade, so we can start directing what happens in Washington, D.C. versus the other way around, which is happening.
That is
right
a great. That is a great quote. Actually, I had not heard of that one before. We're talking to Barry Hinckley. He is the primary drafter of this Redeclaration of Independence, online at redeclaration.org. Real quick, just a comment from you. As you and I have been speaking, I got an alert came across my phone. The Democrats saved Johnson's $95 billion foreign aid plan from GOP rebel blockade. Where are you on matters of foreign spending, particularly on these incidents involving the Eastern European war with Ukraine, obviously what's going on in the Middle East, the potential in the South Pacific with Taiwan and China and so forth. This $95 billion is going to be spread out to the three of those. Where are you when we are trying to you know, restore our own country to the constitutional republic we have done. Should we be spending this money in those places?
Well, absolutely not. It's one of our tenets on the redeclaration that we do not spend a nickel abroad or share any of our resources with other nations until we get our house in order. I mean, we have so many problems here, from eroding cities to massive veterans problems, and we're putting these poor men and women in wars all around the world for the last 6 or 7 decades with major problems to the rest of their lives because of the trauma they suffered. We haven't sorted those issues out. We've got, you know, failing schools. You know, we have massive amounts of debt. Where's this $95 billion even coming from when we're borrowing $1 trillion every 100 days to run this place? It is absurd. We need to get it's almost the height of arrogance to think that we can solve other people's problems when we are such a mess ourselves.
I do not disagree with that in principle, and in probably 99% of the circumstances, I fully agree with it. But any room for exceptions when it comes to Israel, which is unlike any of the other entanglements around the world, is an existential one, because there is a little declaration that they want to destroy them, to literally destroy all Jews and from the river to the sea, the entire thing there. They are only democratic ally in the entire Middle East. And they are literally fighting for existence. A people that, you know, were already attempted to be wiped out once in Europe. So any room for an exception there?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, we can't become complete isolationists because we know what happens when you do that too, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, where there are functioning non-corrupt democracies like Israel, you know, unlike Ukraine. Sure. Yes, of course, we have to continue supporting Israel. You know why we have to? Because it worked. Israel's a functioning country that has its act together. Ukraine is not, right? So, you know, we can't pare back to nothing, but we can't keep extending because we just don't have the money and we don't have our own problem solved. So, yeah, you know, we can't isolate our proven allies, of course, but we can't extend ourselves right now. We have to focus internally and fix our own stuff here.
Great response. That's what I was really hoping to hear. Now we are completely in sync. So redeclaration.org. I love the fact, by the way, that you guys put this in script. You know, made it available to be viewed in script as well. Dated October 4th, 2023, the Redeclaration of Independence. It looks exactly like the same text of the original. So check this out and sign the petition. I did it. I multitasked during our interview, and I actually signed my name to this. Thankfully, I had the...
Oh, thank you, Bob.
Well, yeah, thankfully I have the autofill on my on my computer, so it was an easy click. But I did. I filled it in, and I signed it with my little mouse here, and I've added my name to this. I want everybody else who's listening to this show, please make a point of that, whether you have the time right now or not, find it later. Go to redeclaration.org, sign that petition. Let's grow some support for returning this country to the constitutional republic origins that it has before it is too late. Barry Hinckley, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, Bob.
You got it. That's Barry Hinckley, and we'll take a timeout now at 11:28. We'll have phone calls after the bottom of the hour break right here on Always Right Radio.
The Answer.
Oh, my goodness. 11:34. It's been a quick show today. Final segment is underway, and thanks to Barry Hinckley, who joined us a little bit earlier today. We talked with Linda Harvey about Aaron's Law, which is... a new law, well, yeah, it's a relatively new law that is aimed at preventing child sexual abuse and violence, which is a good thing, but might be doing just as much damage intentionally, I think, than it is, or as it is doing good. That's the reality. Just a different type of abuse. We talked about that with Linda Harvey. If you missed either one of those interviews, go to WHKRadio.com after the show, WHKRadio.com, about an hour after the show. Everything should be uploaded there for you to listen to at your leisure. Got time for phone calls now at 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. And I have one now from John Stover. I just saw John last week when he was kind enough to come into our studio and give me a very undeserved award as far as I am concerned, but very much appreciated, talking about liberty. And John Stover from Ohio Value Voters, good morning. What's on your mind, good sir?
Well, good morning, Bob. And believe me, you were more than deserving. And, you know, I hope we don't have to continue to you know, convince you how much deserving you were.
No, I probably shouldn't have said. Yeah, I don't want to go through that again. But thank you, John. Again, thank you and everybody on the board at Ohio Value Voters for that great honor. So appreciate that.
Well, Bob, I wanted to, if I could, just make a few comments briefly regarding Linda Harvey. Linda Harvey is an extremely knowledgeable person on the subject matter when it comes to the discussion earlier. You know, this bill started 2 years ago in House Bill 105. It passed the House, and it was every single Democrat voted for it. And when this bill was making its way over to the Senate, I right away got a hold of the education chairman, Senator Andrew Brenner, and said, I said, Senator, we got a real problem here. I mean, anytime the Democrats collectively vote for something, and looking at the bill, it confirmed my greatest fears. I said, but anytime they vote collectively for something, I said, you know, Houston, we have a problem. And so I did give, you know, some ideas, some thoughts. We met with Senator Brenner, and they did incorporate. And I give also State Senator Sandy O'Brien, who's the vice chairman of that committee, making some very good amendments to the bill. But we knew that this still was something potentially that could happen within our schools. Now, I know that you and Linda Harvey, Bob, had talked about, you know, who do we contact? We contact our legislators and so forth. But, you know, something that's extremely important to for your listeners and for all of us in Ohio to remember is this fact. It was last year that Senate Bill 1, giving the governor the education responsibilities. Now, he wanted the responsibilities for education. The Ohio Senate said Senate Bill 1, which passed both chambers, you know, gives him that authority. So, you know, we remember back through history and back with Harry Truman's administration, he had placed on his desk, the buck stops here. Well, right now with education, it stops with the governor. And the governor, through administrative rules, can step in through his, you know, director of K through 12 education and workforce development. He can do what's necessary to address some of these matters with administrative rules. So I'm going to be reaching out to him today. Hopefully we'll be able to have a conversation. I've had conversations with Director Dakin, Steve Dakin, in the past, and he seems like somebody that I'm hoping that he will take whatever necessary action to address this matter. But, you know, this is a you know, something that Ohio Value Voters is gravely concerned with. And, you know, we work with Linda Harvey and Mission America on a number of these issues. And certainly we you know, appreciate everything that she's doing. Appreciate the fact that you're bringing this to the attention of Ohioans today, Bob.
So, well, yeah, and thank you. And you brought it to my attention, and that caused the reach out to Linda, and she did a great job of explaining everything earlier. So I appreciate that teamwork. John, what advice do you think you would have for parents right now to get out ahead of this? You know, the idea that this is in some schools and it's going to be coming to other schools, they're all going to be choosing what curricula they do to meet the requirement of Aaron's Law. What should parents do right now? I mean, should they already be contacting teachers, administrators, board members, and so forth to find out what their plans are for you know, preventing of sexual abuse?
Well, you know, Bob, one of the things that we make all parents in the state of Ohio aware of whenever we have a chance to, and it's on our website, protectohiochildren.net, and that is the fact that under Ohio Revised Code 3313.60, Section G, they have the right to go in and state, you know what, I want to see everything that my child's being exposed to. And when it comes to Second Step, it comes to you know, Aaron's Law material, I want to see it as a parent. It's better than a public records request, you know, a FOIA request. And because that code basically states that, you know, that the school district must provide that parent with that information material. And basically, if they find out that Second Step is part of what's being taught, they need to basically request that, you know, it is no longer being taught to their children, and they need to see to it that if they are going to continue, they, you know, need to draw their child from that material being taught, and they need to contact the governor's office as well. Because once again, the governor, you know, has sole responsibility for education, and he certainly can take the necessary steps to see to it that children are not exposed to this inappropriate material.
Completely agree. So talk to legislators, absolutely. But as John said, talk to the governor's office as well. Make sure you just besiege them with emails and phone calls and everything else that you can to let them know how you feel about it as parents and as just responsible community members about what is being done and attempting to be done to kids. It is that important. John Stover, always appreciate hearing from you. Thank you so much, good sir.
Thank you, Bob. God
bless. Right, have a great day. Bye-bye. God bless you, too. By the way, this is a good time for me to remind you, since we're talking about what is being done to the schools and in the schools, to remind you that there are other options. Literally, what we're watching right now is very, very disturbing. And I'm talking about the government-run schools and the parochial schools and the private schools all at the same time. Because they're all doing the same thing. The wokeness and the indoctrination and everything else that we're talking about has made really left us with very few options. We talk about homeschooling all the time, and that is a good option if you have the ability and the time to commit to homeschooling your children. But if you don't, the best option, honestly, is to find an alternative type of school like the Northeast Ohio Classical Academy. I've had Bob Anthony on. I've had David Baum on. Dr. Baum is the head of school there. This is launching this fall, K through 5. It is a Hillsdale College curriculum-driven classical academy, a return to classical. It's a charter school. It's tuition-free. It's not a private school where you got to come out of pocket. It'll cost you the same thing at NEOCA, the Northeast Ohio Classical Academy, as it will cost you to put your kid in your public school in your district. Except your kid will be taught how to think and not what to think. And that's just something I want to throw out there. If you've got a kid who's going to be in K through 5, that's how the school is going to start this coming fall. If you've got a child who is eligible in K through 5, you can get them out of the disaster that is your local government-run school and get them into a classical academy where they will be educated with the highest possible standards and curriculum that you agree with in terms of its appropriateness. It's just important. That's all I can say. It's important, and it is the best option available. Tony, South Euclid, you're on AM 1420, The Answer. Fire away, Tony.
Yeah, Tony from South. Yes, sir. Hey, listen, I agree with you about the manipulation and the brainwashing from these religions and, from the Muslims. You know, and I got to say also, there's been manipulation from Christianity. They're not, any better in the respect that there's a lot of things you have to dig deep and you'll find that the course of life isn't exactly the way it's supposed to be in any of the religions. And people need to research this.
Tony, what the hell are you talking about? What are you talking about? Do you see Christian groups out there raping and torturing groups in the name of their faith in order to advance their faith, promising eternal life and salvation and happiness with virgins, at their disposal? I mean, why are you comparing Christianity to this to the bloodlust of these religions?
Well, that's a good question, and I'm going to tell you, it's not so much with the actions, but it's the words in the Bible, the King James Version, and one of them is people say to me.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.